Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. To learn more, visit rt11.com.
Time for Lunch is a new podcast from HRN for curious young eaters, where we focus on the serious questions.
Aren't chickens tiny dinosaurs?
We get to know our favorite foods in unexpected ways.
We just like cheered like you would cheer for your classmate when they're rounding second base in softball. And we just like, peach, 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 peach. Yay, thank you, peaches.
Learn some new recipes and jokes.
What does a boxer's mom put in his lunch? A knuckle sandwich.
And load up on fun facts.
Experts estimate that there are between 1 and 2,000 types of insects eaten around the world.
So roll up your sleeves and dig in. Subscribe to Time for Lunch on your favorite podcast app so that you and your favorite young eater can catch up on the whole first season. New episodes of season 2 out each week.
Hello, and welcome to A Hungry Society. I'm Korsha Wilson, and this is a show where we talk about food, food media, and so much more. Today's show is an interview with two of my favorite people and one of my favorite couples ever, Chef Cicely Sewell Johnson and Mavis J. Sanders. Cicely grew up in Los Angeles and is a graduate of the Cordon Bleu's Culinary Arts Program and interned at the Los Angeles Times Test Kitchen. She also co-founded Pinky and Reds as part of La Cocina's incubator program in San Francisco. MJ grew up in Georgia and is a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America as well as Georgia Southern University. She's worked at Blue Hill at Stone Barns and Untitled in New York City. And she was part owner of the award-winning food truck Pico House in Los Angeles. She was also the Director of Operations for Brownsville Community Culinary Center, and in 2019, she was honored with the title of Rising Star Chefs from Star Chefs and was part of the James Beard Foundation's Chefs Boot Camp. Together, Cicely and MJ are the founders of Food Plus People, a company they founded with the idea that every community should have access to quality food and every single person deserves the dignity of a hot meal composed of ecologically responsible ingredients that nourish the body from the inside out. So usually on this show, I'm having a conversation with someone and I may not know them that well, but I'm trying to get at the heart of what they do. With MJ and Cicely, I got to have a conversation with two people who I'm very close to, and we talked about a lot of different topics, like the realities of our food memories, those formative food memories that made us want to follow these career paths, and why we tend to remember things in this rose-colored glasses sort of way instead of the good and the bad parts. MJ also shared stories about being a queer, mask-presenting Black woman in kitchen spaces, and Cicely shared how being surrounded by women, people of color, and the LGBTQIA community throughout her career has helped her see how things should be done instead of just sticking to the status quo. I just love these two so much, and I even got kind of emotional towards the end of the episode just telling them how much they mean to me. And you're gonna hear that, and I hope you enjoy this conversation. I also hope you'll check out Food Plus People and order some of their hot sauce and fry mixes. They gave me a gift box of the original, the mild, and the sweet heat sauces like 10 days ago, and I already have to re-up because I've been putting the original sauce on absolutely everything. It has like this really nice heat with like a bit of like leeks in the background and onions, and it's delicious, so you have to try it. So I hope that you'll check out their products, and I hope that you enjoy this conversation. Thank you for listening to A Hungry Society. All right, Cicely and Mavis J.
I'm so happy to have you on the show.
We're so happy to be doing this.
Oh, don't try the phone you professional voice.
Are we live? Are we doing this? Is this recorded?
This is recorded.
This a part of the thing?
It's about time.
Yes. This is actually the show right now.
It's fine. It's cool. I mean, I know that I'm your second choice. You only really wanted Cicely in here, and I'm good.
Wow.
I'm also trying to be very, like, diplomatic and be like, I'm so grateful to be here in this space.
No, it's cool.
Wow. Okay. So starting the show with resentment from MJ. That's never happened before.
Resentment. Okay. I'm not resentful. I'm just saying I understand my place when it comes to the three of us hanging out together. All right.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's not the case at all.
No.
It's okay.
You are a package deal, and I'm very happy to have you both.
Yay. We're a package deal.
So for listeners that aren't familiar, can you both introduce yourselves?
My name is Mavis Shea. I am a chef in New York City, and I work in food, social justice, like an equity advocate.
That's like really nice. I mean, I'm Cicely. I cook food. I'm Cicely. I'm a chef. I've opened and owned places.
Yeah.
I like Black people.
Black people are my jam.
And I make sure that we all know that we all are.
That everybody know you like Black folks.
Everybody should know that I like Black people. they will be in here. They will be working in here. They will be fed in here. Hello, Black people.
Yes.
Okay, so those are great taglines for sure. Well, I wanted to have you both on the show, one, because I love you both and think you're wonderful and make the food world way better. But I also have never really talked to you both in depth about your paths to becoming chefs. And I'd love to hear, let's start with you, MJ. Since you think I don't actually want you here.
I mean, it's so funny because you're just like, we've never talked to you in depth about our past. Maybe we had it like that.
I think I've been in an article where we talked in depth about my past. So.
Wow. So rude. Okay. We're going to restart this episode.
Us talking to you gives us this sense of like, a deeper understanding sometime of that. Like,
what do you mean?
I feel like when we talk to her about our past and our why, it makes me feel a little more responsible for the space that's happening around me and the story that we're telling.
We've talked about like both of your professional lives and like, you know, your path to where you are now, but I'm talking about like what in your childhood made you think, I want to do food for the rest of my life?
Oh, yes, Mavis. Tell us.
I was hiding. It was a good place to hide. I did not want to get in trouble. I didn't want to get my tail beat.
You could say ass beat. You could say ass beat.
I didn't want to get my ass whooped. And it was an easy way to stay like out of trouble. You know what I'm saying? I have a lot of cousins, and it's a lot of people just running around. And, you know, in the country, like, there's, like, you know, just doors are unlocked and people go from house to house. And if you got that many kids, something's bound to get broke or somebody's bound to do something they ain't supposed to.
Ooh.
So, I wasn't down for that guilt by association. So I would stay over at my grandma's house and... my grandma was a cake lady at the church, and she was always baking cakes and pies and stuff like that. And, you know, there was always an egg to be separated or a spoon to be licked, and
yes,
I could
make
myself useful there. And then all of a sudden you kind of get this, you know, when you're a kid and even having children now, we do it sometimes, where the child has done like the minimal effort in something, but you give them credit for doing something. And so like I would be making like helping, assistant in making a cake in some way. And afterwards, you know, a cake would be made and people go by, they start picking off pieces of it and they're eating it and everything. They're like, ooh, who made this cake, you know? And they'd be like, oh, she made it. And I'd be like really excited about it. And so it was like a way for like instant gratification and to connect with people and be recognized in a sea of children.
That's where you get your competitiveness from.
as having value, you know what I mean? As being able to do something well.
It like affirmed your like affinity for cooking.
But it also made you seen in the quest for trying to hide.
Right. It was, you know what I mean? Like it, mm-hmm. it was a way, if somebody is really happy with something that you've done, you're probably not about to get beat. So
that was like the crux.
I'm not gonna lie to you about it, you know what I mean? Like, there was a large part of my life, and I could be hella honest about that, I don't care, that that was based in fear, not necessarily in wanting to do well, but like not wanting to be hurt. And that was really, I mean, that's still something that I have to work without today, you know, and not operating from a place of fear.
Yeah.
Or
and you said you grew up in the South. Can you let listeners know where in the South?
South Georgia, in Albany, Georgia, 2 hours north of Florida Georgia line. Out there, like nothing.
It's different.
Its biggest news is like the coronavirus. It was like put it on the map. Said a bomb went off in South Florida because they don't have any like healthcare down there. You know, there's like one hospital, you know, for like 40,000 people, and they didn't have the infrastructure to take care of people once they got sick. And so people started dropping like flies overnight. It's very much still segregated. You know, they side of town versus our side of town. Which is really what kind of made me pivot and how I thought about food once I got a little bit older, because it was like I would go home and I would try to cook for my family and I couldn't cook anything or anything that I was learning about because the ingredients weren't there, or you know, the potatoes were soft, or like finding any lettuce that wasn't romaine or iceberg wasn't an option unless you drive over to their side of town. Right. And you go get, go to a Publix or a Kroger on their side of town. But on our side, all we got is, you know, the Pick and Save or the Piggly Wiggly or the Harvey's with the cement floors and the bad lighting, no fresh herbs, you know, very little like vegetables to choose from. So I don't know, like that really had a huge impact on how I approach food and how I want to see Black people reclaim like their food sovereignty in their communities.
Wow.
And Cicely, what about you?
It sounded like not going to be as interesting as that. I mean, I had the scandalous life growing up.
Yeah, you did.
So that's not even what I meant, though. I think for me being raised, and it's weird looking back on it now because it was like dysfunction brought everyone together. Like as an adult, you can like be like, that was dysfunction. Because it was so many people that didn't have a place to go, weren't speaking to their families. There'd be times when we weren't speaking to other parts of our family, but like my family always was about like opening the door. The thing that makes Black people great, you know, the cookout idea, like coming and sitting and gathering. And every woman in my family cooked as a profession. Mm. Which is really interesting to be in that space. I mean, you know, so it was like so cool to me to be able to entertain, to be able to invite everybody over and prepare the food and that thing that gives people, but that you also get in return. And I think because I always thought I was a little kooky. That's how I found like friendship and community. It was always through food. It was always through the fact that like we were a group of people, or my mom's friends, or my older brother's friends, or my grandparents' friends or family. Like we had no, these are the bunch of people that had nowhere to go and weren't necessarily accepted. Mm-hmm. And so they could all find, come together and find community in their lack of acceptance everywhere else.
Yeah.
So I think that was,
it's interesting. Like,
no, go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying like that, that now growing up, I realized like the, how I romanticized that story. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. How I was absolutely
like, mm-hmm. was such a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. But it was like
this is
no, because
so
you didn't talk to your brother and you couldn't go to, you know what I'm saying? Like it was that thing.
Yeah.
Even it was great though. Like I remember growing up as a kid and my brother's friends, and this is why it's so weird to me now, like the reality of what that meant, like you being kicked out of the house and having nowhere to go. So my mom would be like, come over, we'll feed you. If you end up spending the night, okay, fine. But like, you know that you can always get a meal and love and the sense of family here.
Right.
Yeah. That's so like, wow, y'all are making me think about my own memories too. And I've always really loves the beauty of, you know, Black cookouts and, you know, crab boils because it's everyone together around the table,
right,
or fish fries. And, you know, in my memory, it's this like super beautiful thing and like super like rosy colored. But mm-hmm. if I'm honest with myself and looking back at my childhood, I often felt alone and like a black sheep. Mm-hmm. And so being with my family in those moments and eating those meals was my way of like comforting myself and feeling like I was part of something.
Right. Because we never talk about that
yeah.
experience that we all have of like eating the meal that you don't want to eat and then being like, you got to sit here and eat it by yourself until 1 o'clock in the morning or else you can't get up. Like I experienced that as a kid. Like if you black eyed peas, that's why I don't like them. Like you, that's not great. Like that's not like, how long did you have to sit there and be like, just swallow it whole?
Did you eat it?
You didn't eat it?
I didn't eat it. Mine was cream of wheat.
I ate them. Yeah, that's why I don't like black eyed peas, because that was the thing.
You cannot pay me enough to crack open a box, a packet of cream of wheat to this day. I sat the entire day there. My mom just conference or something. She was like,
stubborn.
Why are you still sitting here? And I was like, okay, cool. She was like, you go to bed without eating. I was like, thank you. Sitting in the chair was starting to hurt.
Really? I ate it. My wow. Crazy though.
Wow.
I mean, okay, you met my friend.
Right. Yeah. You won.
Stop. Wow. Okay.
This is like the perfect segue into my next question, because one of the, you know, I've been talking to guests about what this moment has been like for them. And I've loved seeing you both on the Black Food Folks IG so much. Mm-hmm. And it'll usually start with a specific topic and then it will segue and wind around and backflip into something else.
But that's on purpose. What people don't know is that is actually on purpose. Like when we talked to them, they were like, what do you want to talk about? And we were like, nothing.
Nothing.
We just want to be a place of that cookout feeling, right, because there could be someone who's very much alone and people are tired of always hearing about doom and gloom and the reality and how it's a horrible system that we're all like, some people just want to be like, let me just sit here. Yeah.
Right. Or it has to
yeah.
be an educational webinar. We're going to bring this person in with all this structure and like, you're going to get walk away with these talking points and all this other kind of stuff. And this is an action step, an action plan. Ours is just to hang.
He's just hanging.
It's just a hang. Like the topic goes so far off to the left. And we do start with, okay, we're going to cover these 1, 2, 3 things in mind. But that's mostly so we don't like have any dead space, I feel
yeah.
like.
Yeah. But no, we never, yeah, we'd be like, yeah. no, we just want to like hang out with people. We want to be that sense of like, if you've never seen someone in the past 3-4 months, at least we've gotten to hang out with you. Feeling.
Yeah. And it definitely does feel like
you know, having done a couple of lives with y'all and tuned into them, it does feel like you've spent time with a group of people you know and you care about. And it does have that cookout vibe of like feeling like you've checked in.
Right? Yeah, that's all. So that's all we really like. I mean, it's granted, it's evolved because now it's like every Monday it has a name. Like
we got a set.
Right. We have a set. We're bougie now. You know, we have a big green light. Like it's turned into a whole thing. But also for me, it's important to like subtly because our lifestyle, it's also being aware that like our personal lifestyle is not really, I think that's why people like us in certain scenarios too. It's like the fact that we are like two whole ass lesbians living together with two children.
Girl Scout.
Being like, it is a girl squad. It's stressful. being very open and honest and regular and talking about being parents, it does break down a barrier that's not being spoken about in our community either. Because how many people would accept us or would look at us sideways just simply walking down the street now feel like we're their friends?
But I also, that too, and also I think that sometimes people want to speak or they want to say something to us and they don't because they're afraid of what other people are going to say if they're seen speaking to us.
Right? Yeah.
Like we do operate.
You think so?
A large. Yeah, for sure. We operate in like a large community where it's very celebrated every time we walk into the room. But when we walk into other spaces, you can tell that there are some people who like are like, no.
Yeah, like flat out no.
No. And then there's other people who are like, you can feel when people are like watching you. You know what I mean? And it's just like, it's great. And I think that the pandemic has given people an opportunity to kind of reach out and communicate with us a little bit more. And be like, oh, like I really do enjoy this dynamic and seeing you guys out. And people will say, are like reaching out to say that they do appreciate seeing us and seeing our family dynamic. And I think that gives people, like, especially in New York, if you're somebody who is what's it called when you don't transplant?
Yeah.
And you're like away from your family, you know, and like you may be like missing that vibe, you know what I'm saying? You may like, I'm complete. My family, like all my, like we were just talking about, all my family's in Georgia, you know what I'm saying? Like, and going home isn't something I get to do often, but it's also like, it's a breath of fresh air that I didn't know that I needed when that happens. And I feel like that there are times when people come into our space and they feel like that too. They're just like, oh, like I love being around you guys because it's just like being back at home with my family. And like I'm okay to share that to some degree with people.
Yeah,
you know, like because it's us being us.
It's, you know, the more I talk to people who are marginalized in any sort of way, who then go on to do their own thing, it's really just about creating space where you're not marginalized. And usually that means owning the space yourself and really like fully being present in it and bringing what you want to that space.
Yeah.
I think that's so true in the food world. I think that's why you see so many people start their own businesses or, you know, like even virtually now with like Black food folks hosting like whole symposiums every day.
Every day.
It's been really, every day. It's been beautiful to see that. And MJ, like, speaking of spaces where you feel like you didn't really fit in, like, you've talked about working in fine dining kitchens.
Yes, like what?
And not, and not feeling like you were welcome. Like, can you talk about that a little bit and, like, what that experience was like for you?
I think, I mean, I think that I've always been another and I'm okay with that. I've been comfortable with that. You know, my dad was like one of the few Black officers in the military. And you know, enlisted families and officers' families kind of hang out in different spaces and different circles. And so I was generally, especially when I'm traveling overseas or living overseas or anything like that, like in the space of being like an only Black kid. And so I was used to that. What I wasn't used to was not being protected. I didn't realize the protection that my father offered me in those spaces. And so going into white kitchens and male dominated kitchens, I was completely prepared and not scared by any means to be an only. What I wasn't prepared for was like all the microaggressions that people, like if you can't explain it to a white person or a white authority to say, hey, this is what happened, this is why this is not okay, and they're like, oh, if they can just say, oh, you're looking at it wrong, or they didn't mean it, or like they don't understand like the nuances of racism, then that you can't, unless it's blatant, like they can't speak to it, right? They don't understand it. It's like you must yep. misunderstand it, and like you should,
yeah.
And, like,
or why can't you laugh about it or let it go? Or
yeah. It was just a joke,
right? Absolutely,
yeah.
So it's not a thing, and then so I mean that definitely pushed me over the edge and out of some of those spaces. I mean, I don't get me wrong, I did my time. Like I stayed and I swallowed it for years. And then also like being a bigger body, like, you know, I'm thicker. And
wait, one more time. Thicker.
Right.
What, like,
is that G-U-H?
Welcome accent. Sure.
I mean, like, let's be real. Like, I'm not a small person. I'm not a petite person. And I'm also a little bit more on, you know, the, like, mask side of the spectrum, you know? I'm not, like, I'm soft and feminine featured. But the way that, like, I dress is a little more mask. And so I think because of that, sometimes guys like tend to like think of me like, oh, you're like one of us. And so they say like really, like sexist or misogynist things. And I think that, they think that I'm going to be okay with that. And generally I'm not. And that puts you in another one of those situations where it's just like, you know, like why can't, oh, it's just a joke. Like we're just playing, like, why can't you laugh about this? Or in particular, like I had a dishwasher for like 2 years who would like say like some of the like really like crude things to me. And there was like, and he would do it like open in front of like, you know, other management, or do it in front of like the CDC. And everybody just thought it was funny. Cause it's like, oh, like it can't be something that you're like worried about, you know what I mean? Like, well, obviously like you handle yourself, and it's just like, okay, you're getting off work and it's 12:30 at night, you know, or it's, you know, 1:15 in the morning, and this dishwasher is like making like kissy faces or like yeah. trying to like persuade me in another language that I don't speak to like come with him. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, this is like, every day we're doing this, you know what I mean? And you don't feel like when that happens that you have anyone to go to. And I mean, you can say no as many times as you want. You know what I mean? It doesn't stop people who are persistent, and it doesn't, and restaurants aren't going to get rid of their best dishwasher who's been there for a decade when you've been there for a year. So, I don't know. I mean, obviously, there's been a reckoning, you know, and the one that is still happening and continues to evolve, which I really appreciate, in the restaurant industry, towards like Me Too. And I think that there's still restaurants that thought that they had evaded that and they were going to keep doing the same things, and you can still see them falling one by one. Like if you didn't heed the warning to change your behavior, I definitely think that, you know, these Gen Zers who were starting to come into working age are not going to put up with this. You know, like, you have millennials who are not down for this anymore. And, you know, I applaud anybody who has it in them to, like, step forward and be like, hey, no, not only is this not okay, and to say no and this isn't okay, but to, like, take action and, like, fight back to make sure that it doesn't happen to anyone else. It, like, the whole thing of this has been the way, this has just been the way it is, I think that's coming to an end. Like, I think a lot more people are starting to see, like, just because this has been how it has been doesn't mean that this is how it has to continue. People are fed up.
Yeah, I really hope so. I can't tell you how many times I heard, oh, this is just how this, you know, the industry works. And, you know, of course the chef yells at you and he might throw something at you. And of course, like, your other line cook might, like, rub up against your ass as he goes to, like, the walk-in. You know, it's just, let it go. Like, this is just how things are. And I agree that, like, this next generation.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And it's, I agree that, like, this next generation is, like, no. Like, we're going to build spaces that don't have that shit baked into it. And we're going to call it out when we see it, which right. I really respect.
Absolutely.
Cicely, you had, like, a completely different experience in that you've worked in restaurants that have, like, centered Black foodways always. So
yeah.
I'm curious, like, what working in kitchens has been like for you.
You know, it was a culture shock coming here for me. And I think, like, in the beginning, I think she felt a bit disrespected. Like, even, like, there were, when we went to Blue Hill and she was like, what do you think? And I was like, this is great, but there's no, like, culture. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, you mean coming to New York
from California.
Okay.
Like, growing up in Los Angeles, where we didn't necessarily, you know, we're a little more, we walk a little slower. We're a little, what do you want to be creative about today? In a sense, that's not to say that the other things don't exist. And especially being in the Bay Area or being, like, a part of La Cucina with so many women of color and so many great Black women, and being like, this is our food story. So it was very interesting here that, like, I didn't get that when I first got, you know what I'm saying? That I had to seek those things out, that, like, white dining was such a, still a big thing here, I guess. That sounds naive, I'm sure. But, like, coming from a space where people were like, no, you got to go to this person of color's restaurant because it's dope and they're telling their food story.
You were in a food space that was all women of color, immigrant women. Like, that's completely, don't be like, oh, all of California is like that. I mean, that's not, like, true.
But that's also where
you guys dominated you, the space.
Which, yes.
It, no.
But also,
and the spaces that you were working in, you guys created.
Yes. But even in Los Angeles, that's when we're not, like, I will often say to you, like, you got the, like, Caucasian scope of L.A. There's a whole food space, people that's so vibrant and so, like, rich that you didn't see.
Well, if you had taken me on a proper date.
We weren't even a thing then.
Oh,
you see how she tried to spin that? That wasn't even a real
thing then.
That was
I'm here for it. This is the first time we've had relationship drama on this show. I am here for it. Oh,
that she tried that. That was disrespectful.
Drag her, MJ. Let's hear it.
What? So rude. But also, like, so that wasn't the realm that you, like, I'll say, like, okay, so you dealt, maybe you didn't, like, with the food truck, like, pickles and peas. And, like, the girl who did, like, peaches and all, those were, like, normal to see, like, people of color doing food and being very, like, loud and overt about that. So it was weird. It's been the only thing that I know. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I don't know, like, all of our chefs were, like, nomads.
I don't know. And then it's, like, even coming out of culinary school, like, in culinary school, granted, I went to the one that was, like, in, like, on Sunset. So it was already, like, the weird, like it wasn't like the one that we knew we weren't like the school that was in Pasadena. Like it was like all the ones that you were like, these are the other kids. Like some of them may not graduate because they're all crazy. But even going into that and like going into the LA Times and like Noelle being my mentor, who was like this white queer lady that like took on my family and like told me everything I needed to know. Like I realized that like as adamant I am about like tell your story, be Black, stand up, but it's the only thing that I've ever known people to do. So even dealing with like kooky white people that say crazy stuff, there were plenty of opportunities where like I didn't necessarily have to say anything because the space itself was like, nah, that's not what we do here. Mm-hmm. So, but I also,
that reminds me of that Toni Morrison quote that's like, you know, the point of racism and being in white spaces is to make you think that you don't have culture and you don't understand these things. And you spend your time trying to prove that you do. And so you lose time doing the work that you were actually put on this earth to do.
Right.
And it sounds like you never had to prove that, which is like such a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
That you were like, no, like, obviously I have culture. Obviously I have depth and breadth to what I do. So clearly.
It's wild to me to hear people say some of these things. Cause I'd be like, y'all did what for how long? Like even like Janet, right? I'm like, how did y'all stay employed? Like what? Somebody put you in a room and turn off the lights and you stayed? So because I've never been in a space where white people that was acceptable. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like even when I was teaching at Urlatab, my boss was a Hispanic trans woman.
Privilege.
And yeah, so it was like the person who ran the kitchen was a gay man. Like so for me it's always been like I've always had something that I identify with, or I've always been a part of the community. But I think that goes back to like being around and raised in that space where like I've always been a part of the other community in a sense, and really like try to root myself in that because that's what.
Yeah, I'm. But it's like, you're not even, I don't even know if other is completely applicable because other, and I push back against using that word because it centers whoever you feel like you are othered by.
Right.
And it sounds like you were never an other. You were working from the dead center. You are in the center of your focus always.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful thing.
Must be nice.
I know, it's really weird. It's really weird. So like, even when we have conversations and she talks about like, so like the spaces that you've created, like people just don't do that. I'm like, I don't know why people are even making that like a conversation and a thing, because it's to me,
she has
to intentionally hire people of color, to intentionally hire those things. It's Tuesday for me. Sorry. You know what I'm saying? No. So
right. It's just the basic, like the foundation, the principles. It's a given.
I'm saying that, Korsha, you have been in the same tri-state area. You know about this. She had a space on the Lower East Side of Manhattan that had all women of color, mostly Black men, single moms, right? Some people housing insecure in shelters. Right? All of them being paid a minimum of like $18 an hour. Everybody was getting a fair wage. Where else? Show me that spot.
I mean, but that's what, so I don't, so like for me, right? Like when we opened Pink.
So she's like, no, like it's not a thing. Like, no, she's like, no, I'm not doing anything. Like I'm just being me. But it's like, I understand that you're just being you, but you were like breaking barriers that this place, that this city has never seen before. Like, and don't downplay that. Don't belittle that as just like, this is just what it is.
I'm not.
Because it's not.
I'm not saying that at all. But like, okay, like I was saying, like Pinky and Reds, right? When we opened that and it's in the Martin Luther King building. It's in the Student Union building. It's on the ground floor. Above us was the Multicultural Center, where it was like, you know, the students of color found their place. It was like queer community, like, you know, the international kids, not the like rich Asian ones, but the ones that are like, we have to work and live and be here. Mm-hmm. They were upstairs. So it was like, they would be like, your kids are so great. And they wanted to like volunteer at one point. So we went upstairs and we dropped them off food. I introduced myself and they'd be like, well, if you don't have anywhere for your kids to go, we'll take them up here. And then it got to the point where they would like, some of them, even still to this day, like Yasmin will be like, would be like, I'll pick them up from school from you. Like, you know, we moved to New York. She was like, well, then like, you guys are a part of my family. I will move. Like, she decided to come to New York and move. And it's like, even some of the kids have like come and stayed here when they visit and like all of these things. Like, so it was like, but so then my obligation was to be like, okay, cool. When she comes down to eat, like, what can you have? You can't eat our meat because we don't serve halal meat. Then we should be serving halal meat. So like, all everyone can eat here. We need to make sure that like, if we want to pour into people, that we're making sure we do it the right way. They like, so I mean, you know, like Reem was my boss and she was the one who set me down when I was a part of La Cucina. I worked at Reem and Knights and they were both like, you have an expiration date here because you're not going to get stuck in this cycle of wanting to be a business owner. And then, so we'll let you work here so you can, cause I was working four jobs. You can quit those other jobs. You can work here, but know that you have like so much time and you need to figure it out so you can go open your space.
That's a beautiful thing though. A lot of business owners aren't like that and don't really provide that platform. Yeah.
She fell into this exceptional place with these exceptional women and she herself is exceptional. So it all makes sense.
Yes. It's true. It's true, Cicely. And you too, MJ. You're not getting off the hook. Yes. Both of you are exceptional.
I mean, but that's...
So, two words?
I don't know.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was like, but that's what we should be doing. I mean, I think that's like, it's just that... It's not that hard. It's just that simple. And I think that was part of the reason why I did get fired from Colors, right? Like, and they did shut us down is because I was not going to buckle on those things. Fine, you want to talk about a fair wage, but what does a fair wage mean really? Because you're basing that on a West Coast standard when we don't even have some of the like...
The same laws.
The laws or barriers that you have. Like so for me, like it's also like you don't get a trophy for just showing up. So I feel like I just showed up. You know what I'm saying? Like
that's a joke.
Right.
I don't know because
that's
it's a joke.
Because you didn't just show up.
I don't know. It's like, guys, I did the thing that I just
No, and don't even do it. Don't even play it like that, because there's no way. You were working day and night. It was not just about showing up. Like as my late aunt would say, you showed up and showed out. It was a completely different story. Day and night you were working on that space and like going above and beyond, running yourself into the ground. And not one of those people who runs themselves in, like leaders that runs themselves into the ground who is like burying everyone beneath them, but like making sure that everyone else had something to stand on, right? Like our entire family went ham. So don't belittle that. Just be like, well, I just showed up.
Okay.
That's like your grandma being like, oh, it's just a pinch of sugar. We all know
it's not just a pinch of sugar. It was the whole bag.
And that's the thing we keep talking about nowadays. Every time we keep having conversations, like we have to stop downplaying, right? And be like, it just took me a little bit, or this dress, this old thing. We have to stop that shit. No, I worked 17 jobs. I like did overtime, did 3 hours of Lyft so I could afford this dress for this event. Stop playing. Like say what you actually had to do so that other people can get that information and know how to do it. You can't sit here and be like, oh, I just showed up. And then when other people are like, how can I make an equitable business? Oh, I just show up. Like, no, that's not what you did. You had to do serious finagling. You had to have serious conversations with the people who you had employed about what their lives were like and like what their hours and what they needed and what their home lives were really about, and actually make an investment in that and then create a schedule for a restaurant that would run properly with all those things in mind.
I mean, okay.
So don't sit here and say, I just showed up.
I hear what you're saying.
If you sat here and say, what? Then you're not hearing what I'm saying.
No, but listen.
This is great. This is exactly how our conversations go.
Yeah, and real. This is.
I'm so glad listeners are hearing this.
But for me, like, that's cool to hear you say that. But like, no, but I'm not saying but in like a bad way, but that's the conversation that I had with Reem. You know what I'm saying? That's the conversation that like a girl named Pinky that I saw Tina have with the people that she hired. That's the conversation that Crazy Carrie, that like I was the sous chef on the pudding truck, had with me. You know what I'm saying? Like Marley was in the hospital for 2 weeks, like dying essentially when she hired me. And I was like, this is, and she was like, okay, make sure she's okay and we'll work it out. And then this job is waiting for you. So for me, it's like wild to hear these other things because I'm like, why are we not doing? And it's not hard. Like what I did is not hard. It wasn't a hard thing. It wasn't, people work hours on hours opening restaurants, right? Like I didn't necessarily work any harder than anyone else. It's just that like, okay, so
I would say you did. I would say you definitely did work harder than
there and saw
other people.
I mean, I had a lot of pushback, but I had to work harder
No, MJ, you're not done. Okay. This interview's not done.
But like, sorry. Okay, I went to church one day and had this very, on top of feeling all of these ways, like somebody hit, you're not going home. That's rude. Mm. You're so disrespectful. But the dude was like, what if your life was meant to be the platform for other people to stand on, right? And that idea like wrecked me to the core. What? Like, what if your life was a platform for other people to stand on?
I don't understand.
Like, what if you were the door? What if you were the gatekeeper? And what would that look like if you were the one leaving the gate open, in a sense? And so that living the life that I've led, but that doesn't mean that, like, this is in food. This was not in acting. This was by no means my experience in acting. It was a horrible, horrible thing. And I would, a big part of why I would never go back is the experience that I had as a 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 16, 17 year old that also shaped how I was treated, how people are treated, how if you're not deemed valuable and relevant, how people treat you.
Right.
And so being on the other side of that, like that's important to me. What if, like when we went to that talk, it's always been for me like, what if I was the last person that you were gonna talk to help shape infinite possibility?
This episode is brought to you by Root 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Root 11 dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Root 11 Potato Chips believe comfort food can be just that. Know where your food comes from. To learn more, visit rt11.com.
So I want to make sure that in this like first half of the show, we talk about food plus people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, oh, yeah. Yeah, that company we started.
Pregnancy all bad.
Why? Will you stop pregnancy?
So,
our glory with like these.
Okay.
I don't know.
Then let her ask the question anyway.
No, you answer. It's your food, baby.
See how you should
so,
do that?
Wait.
Sorry. No.
Wait.
Yes. Yes.
So, words that have come up over and over again are food and people.
Yeah.
And space and community.
Yeah.
And you launch this line, this food company, this food baby, as you call it, called Food Plus People, and actually tried the original hot sauce yesterday.
Nice.
And I did, yes. And I didn't text y'all because I wanted to talk about it on the show. It is so good. It has like a depth of flavor underneath the heat that is like, you don't taste that in normal like hot sauces. So I just want to say it's really good. And I'm not just saying that.
Thank you.
It was very tasty. I had it on avocado with black beans and rice.
Wow.
On like a vegan bowl. It was really good.
Thank you. Oh, that's really nice. That's great.
Oh, so tell listeners about Food Plus People and the genesis of it.
We have no idea, honestly.
Don't.
Okay. So here's the thing. It was like, first it started out as like, what are we going to do? We both don't have jobs. But it was like, how do we still do the things that matter to us?
Saying this.
How do we?
We both don't have jobs, but also like we both lost our jobs working with separate nonprofits that were supposed to be about people and completely failed at what they were supposed to be doing and executing. And then in like the last moment, instead of like doing the right thing, hung those people out to dry.
Yeah.
So that's like where we're like, where this, like where we're talking about when we like hit the ground, like after we came out from that whirlwind, right? And our feet like landed solidly on the ground and we could finally think again.
We had a lot of conversations about like, what is good food? What is help? What is, you know, like, and it wasn't, I think like some of the reasoning why was like, yes, the people were not protected. And then like I will never forget on our very last day, one of our moms has two small children and she lives in a shelter. And
one of the moms that was working at Colors.
Yeah. And so we, like, people had tipped really, really heavy that night. And it was like 11, 12 o'clock at night. And so we like cashed everybody out, gave them their tips. And she was like, cool. I also should preface this. Like we had a basement and we had like put the children, all the children in the basement so the moms could work to make money that last night. And my children watched them. The blind older, leading the blind.
Older children. Watching small children.
Which is exactly what we do in our communities anyway.
Right.
But like.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this idea that at 11 o'clock at night, you're getting money. I was like, hey, can you watch my children real fast? And she ran out and bought diapers and Benadryl because her smaller child was a girl and she needed diapers. And then her older son had asthma and was like having this like allergy attack. And that's like, was Marley. So it was like, what are we really doing?
And I'm
to
not
help
talking about a case of Pampers. I mean, like, a pack of three.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Just like, to be able to carry you over.
Right.
And that, like, and then she was talking about, like, you know, being in the shelter, which, like, the Madison and Marley and I have, like, fell into, like, ridiculously hard times after getting divorced. So I completely identified with this. And so she was like, I didn't have anywhere to go. I don't have a kitchen, so I'm always eating in a bodega. It's like, so how can we make things for people that's really delicious and easy? You know, then it's like teaching to these classes to like kids going to college that like are the first to go to college. You know, when we talk about like the price match at the farmers markets with their food stamps would be like, cool. Some of us have food stamps. Some of us, our parents are undocumented. We can't get food stamps. So it's like, how can we make food that sits in the center of the aisle? Cause all these fucking people that are like shop the perimeter, what a privilege to be able to like shop the outside of the aisle. So how can we make really good really simple, really clean, really honest food that can live in the middle of the aisle, that people can get and be proud of and not feel like they're compromising, one, their quality of life, whether it's because you live in a shelter or it's because you don't know how to cook. I also was like super honest about the fact that like I, thinking it through, I didn't want us to make food that hated people, like affirmed people's hatred for learning how to cook. That was another reason right. why we did the Black Food Folks thing, you know, as Food Plus People the way we did, because I don't need to teach you shit, because in me demo, saying yeah. like I'm teaching you something implies that you don't know something. And I hate this narrative that like Black people or people that aren't white don't know how to cook and right. feed themselves.
It's an education issue like, instead of an access issue.
Right.
It's completely bullshit.
That's so true. It does like, that is the overwhelming narrative of like, oh, well, you're buying like things that are already prepared. Like what, why are you doing that? Like, it's not as good.
Right. That all that stuff is like bad for you or whatever it is. So like, how can we mm-hmm. create items that like, you can feel like you were cared for. You actually feel nourished, like when you taste it, right? Like when you pop open that hot sauce.
Yeah,
you've had a million hot sauce, and it's like hot sauces before, but it's like, yeah, there's layers to this. You know that when you taste it, like somebody really thought about this, and in that, whenever you're consuming that, you feel cared for, right? Like somebody gave this to you.
Yeah,
they provided this for you. Right. You feel cared for. And a lot of times when you are shopping in the middle, that's not necessarily what you feel, you know.
Yeah.
It's also about like how you eat, how you get to eat. There's a lot of dignity in service and being served,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think a lot of that is taken out or taken away when you talk about people who like, right. Let's be honest, right? Like having a stove is a privilege.
Right. We learned that.
Absolutely.
Having a gas employee, right, is a privilege.
Yeah.
Like, you know that.
Yeah. Having shelter, having a home is a privilege.
It's a privilege,
yeah.
right? So let's say, like, how do I give you, right? So, like, our first, like, I mean, aside from the hot sauce, it's like our first, like, concert.
Like eight products.
Right. That we, that like we ever labored over was just like, how do we give you a complete meal that you can feel proud to eat? You know what I mean? That it wasn't just slops, that it wasn't just like scraps or a second thought or just like here, right? Like there's a difference. We were having this debate the other day or conversation about like, there's a difference between the pack of ramen and the cup of not ramen and how you eat it. Right, because there's a difference in you heating up something on a stove and putting it in a bowl and eating it with a fork than you sticking a styrofoam cup in a microwave.
Yeah,
those are two different feelings. One of those feels like you're going to be standing, the other one feels like you're going to sit down, and how you eat that meal is completely different, right? And so how do we make things that come out the center of the aisle give you that feeling of like, somebody has labored over this and cared for me and wants me to feel like a whole human being when I sit down for this meal, right?
And that was, I mean, that was like a really, like, we have not, like, it's funny, someone texted me yesterday and was like, I'm on a camping trip in South Dakota and I'm eating my soup. Because for us, it was like, yes, it has to taste good. It has to look good. It has to be. And I'm weird. Like when she'll be like, what do you want it to taste like? I'm like summertime. You know what I'm saying? Like that is my answer for shit for her. But then it was like, even down to the packaging, we would have conversations because it's like when you don't have, right? Like if you don't have money or you don't have a love for cooking, and I think those two people are target people. Like if I hate cooking and you give me even the top ramen that's not in the styrofoam, but the one that's
in the packet,
if I open that fucking packet and not all of that powder comes out, I wasted my 69 cents. You know what I'm saying? And that's going to be the thing that goes, see, this is why I hate cooking and I just could have bought food to go. Like little things like that. So it was like, how do we get a package? How do we tell a story? One that's super easy, super clean, that people don't have to think too hard over. That like, so the soup, everything is in the soup. And then the directions say you dump it in a pot, you fill the packet up with water twice, and then you boil it. Because that also, like, you know, for us, like, taking the water and filling the packet up also gets all of the dried mix out of the packet and it's into your pot. So you're not throwing away this package, and like, and then it also eliminates dishes for you. So it was like those kind
right.
of things.
You don't have measuring cups,
right?
Like, I work with kids sometimes nowadays, it's like a big thing. They don't have measuring cups. And so like a lot of our conversation is like, if you can't measure something, like, how do you eyeball it? What is it about? Like, how do we equate it to other things? And I think a lot of people don't think about that cooking. So I want, yes, this is like low key, like all the products that we're making are made for those people to be able to use. And then they're also 100% like, you know, they got a little style on them and they've got a lot of flavor, and people who do love to cook 100% can get down on it.
And they,
so
they tell us,
so can you tell me about some of the products that you have, like, in addition, we talked about the hot sauces.
Right.
And what kind of soups do you have?
Well, we had like a sweet potato orzo soup. We've actually completely abandoned soup because it's very stressful. we're going to revisit it.
Yeah, we're going to revisit it as being like soup mixes, as like powdered mix, as opposed to actually having the vegetables already in them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we like dehydrate everything, we grind everything, do all of that. So it's like, how can we also do that? And you just drop it in and it dissolves and it's delicious. Right. And so, and then the products themselves are color coded. So that's another thing that, like, so we wanted to create this idea of just adding.
Right.
So like you just, we'll, even if you buy all of our products, like if you buy the seasonal mild, that's actually the dredge for the fish flour. So all you need is the fish.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they're all,
that's really smart.
Yeah. So like we do, like, so in the restaurant or when we do our pop-ups, we do fried chicken and pancakes. So from us, you would get the fried chicken mix, the pancake mix, and the syrup. So you just need the chicken. So it was that thing. And then, so you can build, you can be adventurous, you can, so the chicken part is the safe part, right? Like, okay, so you just get the chicken and, but if you wanted to like, then venture out and start making your own syrup or make a jam to pour over your pancake or something like that. Like, it was like, how can we meet everyone at their culinary journey? So our products are rooted in being luxury for the people that people don't deem luxurious, but adventurous for everyone.
Yeah. Centering those people
in
the products instead of like just trying to deliver products with whatever sort of ethos you're thinking of, just thinking about what they need instead.
So that was like, you know, that meant that like whatever's on the side of the label is all that's on the side of it. Well, because part of that was too, this was like our opportunity to create things that like, cause I have 800 allergies because Marley, our smallest daughter, has 50 million allergies and I got her allergies. So it was like, how do we create things that we can actually eat? So like now we're like, okay, so cool. We have this fried chicken batter, which is like, flour and different like seeds and grains. And then we have like a fried fish, just because us as Black people, like our stories will always be centered in Blackness. It's like, we know that like chicken flour is totally different than like fish flour. So like the fish flour has cornmeal in it, which I can't eat anyway. So now we need to create something that's completely gluten-free, right? That like Marley could eat and not stress. And so it allows for us to be creative and be like, okay, so what seeds, what grains, what texture can we put in there? Do we make,
do we buy a whole something and not grind it as smooth as the flour to make it a little more coarse so it gives you this crunchy cornmealy feel even though you don't have corn in here? Like, how can we be creative with simple things, which is a testament to Black people to me in general, and make it really magical and fun? So that was like, how do we tell those stories? How do we do that? You know, but then it allows us to like push ourselves. Cause like, how do we make syrup? Like I have a oak allergy. We didn't want to make it. We wanted to make everything to be shelf stable. So how do we make something that tastes like maple syrup that has no maple, nut, oak, anything stabilizer in it that's delicious? So it's like, we don't have a lot of products because the things that we labor over are so...
And we just started.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's such a brilliant idea. And I love, like, what y'all were saying about thinking about other, like, points of view and, like, how are people trying to meet people where they are instead of trying to just design something and draw people to it. It's very much like, it's very much people forward, which I love.
Yes.
I want to know. Yeah. What are y'all taking in right now in terms of like music and movies and TV and stuff to inspire you?
Dynasty.
Oh my God.
I'm watching the reboot of Dynasty. I mean, it just depends because my brain is also like,
it's a reboot.
It's a reboot. It's not the original Dynasty.
I had no idea.
Come on, man. Are you serious?
I'm in no way interested in the show.
So rude. I mean, I think that because we're so intentional about things, sometimes I just want to be like, let's just watch a thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's just have it on.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also the person who like overcommits to things. That's why I think I'm so like a no person in theory or keep things in the background, because like now I'm just like, I just want to see this show through and hopefully it'll get better.
I was like that with Pretty Little Liars back in the day. I was like, at this point, I just have to see it end.
I've never seen that show.
I don't do it. It's the same thing. Like the first season, you're like, oh my God. And then after that, you're like, I just need an answer.
Who killed this girl? Yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, pretty much.
But like we watch, so it's sad because we're really cheesy, corny people, because we'll be like, hey, this thing is coming on. So then we'll be like, well, we can't watch it because we have to watch it together. Yeah. Or we have to watch it as a family. You know what I'm saying?
But so then it's like, I feel like most families and couples do that though.
Yeah.
It's so annoying.
But she gets wrapped up in Dynasty and I'm like, I don't want to watch Dynasty. So now we're stuck on Dynasty and it's like.
Right. And then she'll be like, so is this the girl that? And you'd be like, yes, but something else happened. This is what.
It's been a month for like 2 weeks straight at this point. Ugh.
What about you, MJ? What are you watching or listening to or looking to for inspiration right now?
Dynasty's giving you inspiration?
No, I'm just saying that's I didn't get that far because when she said watching, I said Dynasty. I mean,
trash.
I'm getting ready to start a book. I'm waiting for other people to get it. It's called Hood Feminism, storyboard.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I want to read that. I mean, for me right now, like Black Food Folks has been really great in like other spaces, but I also have been like, as a family, I think we've been kind of intentional to like communicate and like slow down. For me, like when Rona happened, it was like, I had to give myself the talking to of, you can't continue to define your value in your work because you can't do anything right now.
Mm.
So you have to kind of sit down and learn to like you and give yourself the grace that like, if you
give
don't,
everyone else.
Yeah. Like if you don't,
yeah,
that's real. If you don't knock all 50 things off your schedule today, or if you just decide to lay in the bed, you still made it.
Mm.
Yeah.
I feel you.
So free time has been like inspiring to you right now, like taking a break from, you know, trying to knock everything off the to-do list.
I say yeah, but then I'm like, what free time have we had? I mean, it was nice. Like the first half of Rona,
we would do like, let's all work out as a family.
Oh yeah, that was
great. We were great. We would get up, we would eat, the girls would go to school, midday we would all stop and like work out and like talk and like, I mean, honestly, the whole thing as a whole has been like really, really great for our like emotional growth as a family.
I think as a couple, I think when our children are losing their mother.
Yeah, now the second half, they're like, we need to go outside and now.
They're about to lose it.
But like us as two individuals, you know, we've had to have the tough conversations. Do the work conversations. What are we opting into? What are we opting out of? Slowing down to just figure out how to be better to ourselves and to each other. And that sounds really pretty, but it's not.
No, it's a very ugly process. It's a lot of work. MJ, what are you taking in right now that's inspiring you?
Cicely Sierra Johnson.
You're so ridiculous.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I like how you...
Okay, but seriously, what are you taking?
Right.
This is why I don't like hanging out with y'all, because y'all don't take me seriously. Same thing.
You have to get off this thing, and you'll be like, so you going to pick this up? Or is this your water on the counter? Did you want to fill it up this morning? I was like, oh God.
No, that's not fair. I literally offered to fill up your water bottle. I don't know why.
It was just deep, intentional passion from... which that
but just came. Because I'm saying that doesn't mean that I'm like, why haven't you picked up your water? My question was, do you want me to fill up this water?
I thought it was a girl, you know, I got stuff to do, move this out of the way.
No, it was like, hey, can I help you with this?
Aww. Oh boy. All right, this quarantine has been tough on all of us. On all of us.
And I'll be like, that's fine, you're right. I'm
look,
sorry.
I swear to God, I'm gonna make it through my grandmother's hands.
You started reading it?
Yeah, I've been reading it. My grandmother's hands?
My grandmother's hands.
Hello?
I can mail you my copy. I can give you my copy.
Okay.
A friend of mine referred it to us and she was like, do it.
Racialized trauma and the pathway to mending our hearts and bodies.
Jesus, that sounds like a heavy read.
Yeah, like even I read the first page and I was like, I'm good.
No, it's actually like, really good.
If you're not in the space of love and compassion and to really dig deep, if you feel like this, if you're angry or if you don't hold space for this, don't read this book. I was like, well.
These are facts, but no, it's really good. I think for me, I have a playlist that I've been listening to for the last 10 years in the morning. I have a playlist that I listen to on Sundays, you know, and those are very ritualistic things for me that kind of keep me...
What's on that playlist?
Which playlist? Sunday morning? Fred
Either one.
It'll be like Ratchetness and then Celine Dion.
Don't do that. That's not on my morning playlist.
No, not
on my
morning.
I believe with Fantasia, Brittany Howard.
Okay, yes, from the Alabama Shakes.
Yeah, her last, the one that she actually came out, that was her solo. There's a song that I call Free Metal, and it's really great. Holy by Jamila Woods is another one that's really, I don't know, kind of sets my mood for the day. Optimistic, Sounds of Blackness. I'm Dope by Tove Nwigwe. I apologize, is also a big one for me. And then, of course, Do It by Chloe and Halle's on there.
And then go on and finish that last one.
Nice by the Cars.
See, that's what I was going to be like.
Yeah, I mean, Somebody Loves You by Beyoncé, awesome. And then Mary J. Blige, Just Fine. Like, there's a whole bunch of different stuff on it.
Go Get It by Mary.
Wow.
Yeah, Living for the City, Stevie Wonder. It's, I don't know. It's my AM, like, get your mind right. At night, I had No Lie, No Joke, in case you haven't caught this.
It's really interesting.
I listen to a Meditation by Diddy.
Meditation by Diddy?
On Audible.
It's on Audible.
She goes...
Wait. Okay, wait, sorry, back up. It's not music. It's a book called Meditation.
No, it's a guided meditation by Diddy. It's called Honor Yourself.
No, it's not. Stop it.
She goes no, to sleep not. To it every night. If I call Madison in here right now and be like, does Mavis mm-hmm. fall asleep with an AirPod in here? She's going to be like, yes, because she goes to sleep to like this guided meditation by Diddy every night.
Yes.
So every time I hear Diddy, I think of this lawsuit from his former assistant. He wanted an assistant to feed him while he was having sex. And I'm not saying
it's good multitasking.
He's right. But I'm saying we have to hear both sides on this. And
I definitely think that's the position, right? Like there are definitely people who pay for, right? Like what they want. If his assistant wasn't willing to do that, mm-hmm. then 100%, like, then he should, then that's his assistant. Like, you can't force your assistant to do that. That's not their job.
Yeah, no, you can't. You shouldn't.
Somebody who will feed him while he's doing the nasty. I wonder what he wants.
I mean, I don't think, you know, you should force anyone to do that, but I understand what? The impulse of wanting to eat while having sex.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Right?
Yeah.
No, you were like,
how do we get here?
I get it. But it's wild to me that, like, it's lightweight. Like, I get it. But I'm like,
you've never, like.
But the thing that's
wasn't there this something on, like, is wrong. Wasn't there a thing on, what was it, on Insecure where she was, like, eating Cheetos and getting head? There was an episode where she was
yes. dreaming. Yeah.
That's a real thing. Like, people, like, you just. What? Why wouldn't I want to? Why wouldn't I want to do that? Absolutely.
But But
eat this ice cream right quick and.
Okay.
So like later, he's gonna eat ice cream and walk in here and look at me like, "Hey, girl." And I'm
that's not a fact.
You be like, "Whoa!"
If it happens,
wait a minute.
Calling you.
You gonna call? That's what you gonna do? If it happens, you gonna call her? Great. Thanks. Thanks. Appreciate it.
I'll be like, what are your plans for that?
All right. I have the last question for y'all, which is this is officially the longest episode of A Hungry Society I've ever recorded.
Oh no, you're sorry.
You know what? That's what you get for trying to put both of us
on the same
1 hour.
Why are you saying sorry? I think it's great. Thank you.
I didn't.
It was the sarcasm at all.
It wasn't me at all.
I'm not.
Oh, sorry. All right. Well, I want to hear about your dream dinner party. This question used to be plan your last meal, but, you know, because of Rona, that felt a little too bleak. So plan your dream dinner party. Who's there? You can invite people living, dead, celebrities, whoever. What's the atmosphere like? And what are you eating or drinking?
I want
Cicely, let's start with you.
No.
We're not doing it together.
Okay. Yeah, we're doing.
Are we? Shit. Do we have separate dream dinner parties?
I want to hear yours.
No.
Yes, I want separate dream dinner parties.
Yeah, we was definitely having separate dream dinner parties.
Okay,
you go ahead.
No, go ahead. Please.
Oh my god, I feel so bad now. I'm trying to like change bad. My story.
Don't yeah. change your story. Be honest about it. Everybody knows how this works. I like
wow.
And then you
wow. Here we go.
Portia, did you watch that talk the other day when I told her that I loved her and she gave me the ugliest look? She looked at me like,
no.
Oh my god, I have it on like, tape. It is recorded.
You recorded it?
Saw it.
Damn, you're that hurt.
We were live in separate rooms.
And oh yeah, I'll send it to you. Perfect. Rude. I'm gonna.
Oh my god!
Wants to know what's your dream dinner party situation?
Yeah, I said I'd go after you said yours.
Yeah.
Dream dinner party.
Ooh, Cicely, you're uninvited from MJ's.
You're uninvited. Shout out, Alanis Morissette.
Dang. Okay, so my dream dinner party. You're there.
No, it's okay. Obviously, I'm not.
It's like somewhere in like Mulholland. Like overlooking like a little mountain, a little like I can see the ocean over there in LA. And grassy backyard and like a not like dead of summer, but like October
weather where it's still like warm and nice. It's like we're eating like gazpacho, but also like fried chicken and pancakes, like it's like hood ratchet, you know what I'm saying? And drinking like, I don't know. I'm like, also this is not real because I have all these allergies.
It's a dream.
It's a dream. My dream. Come on, Lord. I would be drinking like bourbon and Red Bull, like something very ghetto. You know what I'm saying?
Interesting.
Bourbon and Red Bull.
Yeah, it's delicious. Have you ever had it? It's like an upper and a downer at the same time.
I hate Red Bull, so I don't drink that, but
I don't drink I've never had Red Bull like by itself. I've only had it with like bourbon.
I think people drink Red Bull because they're like, I'm about to do some shit and I need to have enough energy for that.
Yeah.
Not because they're like, ooh, you know what I feel like?
Yeah, no. I've only had
gasoline on my palate.
You're so rude. This is my dream. It would be like,
and who's there?
Huh? MJ's there.
Who's there?
Oh, MJ.
Anybody else?
I would have like, this is a weird mashup of people. It would be like for sure like Nipsey Hussle. It would be like Angela Davis, Audrey Hepburn.
Interesting.
Yeah, she did a lot for people. I would probably have Princess Diana there. What? And like someone like Jill Scott.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good guest list. Are your children there or no? Like,
no.
That's terrible.
Well, we're not dying anymore. You said that there's no more death, so this is just dinner and we go back
this
to regular
life.
This
is my dinner
right?
party straight out of COVID. I've seen these foods 24 hours a day. You know, love you. Bye.
All right. Well,
to your dream dinner party, kids. Chuck E. Cheese or whatever. Yeah, that would be my
dream. All right, that's fair, I guess.
They'd waste it.
MJ.
They'd waste it.
Your dream dinner party.
Mine would be like mac and cheese, grilled cheese.
And cheese pizza.
And cheese pizza. And like, I guess that's your dream. So, yes. And then Madison would get so confused that she wouldn't know what to do. And she'd just cry.
This is so stressful. There's so many things to eat at Chuck E. Cheese.
Okay. My dream dinner situation, I think that it would be... I'm not really sure... I'm not really sure what we'd be eating. It would definitely be something that would be like family style. I would like, can I have something that's something in the middle of, like, I really love hot pot, right? I love how you like get to add what you want and cook what you want and like make a million different soups out of one soup in the middle and everybody's just,
oh, you know, yeah, what I mean? Yeah, that's good.
But then, like I want to do something like that, but I also want to do, like, I want, like, crab legs in this situation if it's going to be, like, my dream dinner. And I want all the bubbles. Everybody's drinking bubbles.
Are they pre-cracked for you?
Ooh, absolutely. Pre-cracked, yes. Let's not do all that work. And only the legs.
Yeah, not the skinny ones.
I actually have an idea for a dinner or a meal that's cooked like around the skinny legs. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
You and Corey should talk. That's his favorite part of crabs and lobsters are the little legs.
Yeah. So I have a whole thing about it. You'll see it later when I do like a pop up or something. So yeah, I think the people who would be at my table are the people who bring me joy. You know, it would be, you know, maybe Cecily, I guess. but like,
it's so rich,
generally, like around my age, because I want to be able, like, when I say bubbles, like I want bubbles like on deck.
So serving you, like a person your age, serving you to know what bubbles.
What do you mean?
What do you mean? You said someone your age.
No, I want to be drinking with people my age.
Oh, okay.
right? I want to like get that good buzz, like where like you're definitely like, you know, good and swasty, but you still know whatever is happening and everybody can still walk and hang out.
Swasty.
And I want to, like, I want to dance. You know what I mean? Like, I want there to be good music afterwards, and I want to, like...
You want a wedding?
No, I don't. Well, I guess you mean a
wedding. Oh, my God. Why did I set myself up for that?
That's so cute. Wait.
I want to dance.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
What? Gorgia.
Who else is at the table?
Yeah, who's at the table?
Cicely, you keep interrupting her.
All right.
I think my life. I think all of my, like... I think it's friends for me. You know what I mean? I think it's people I know. I'm not invited. Like, I don't really have a lot of people who I,
like
in my life,
eight people
who I look up to that I don't actually know. Right. I think I dropped that habit a long time ago. Cause like you meet, like, I don't, there's not like somebody famous that I'm like, oh, I want to have dinner with this person. No, I want to dance with my friend.
Yeah, they don't have to be famous. It can be people from your life. Yeah. It could be
you want to dance with
someone, you're a neighbor. It doesn't matter.
You want to feel the heat with somebody.
Yeah, for sure. Somebody that loves me. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Dance it out, you know, like Grey's Anatomy style. You know, let's just whip my hair back before.
I whip my hair like
a I can't.
Yeah, of course you can definitely come to my party. 100%.
Oh, thank you. I'll bring bubbles, I promise.
Yeah. We still have
I'll bring a magnum of bubbles.
Yeah. You know, I want all my homies. Like I want all of my people that I reach out to for advice, you know what I mean? And all the people who are like in this journey with me about like making, you know, leaving their impact on the food world. And who are just like genuine and sincere. The people who we laugh with in the comments at Black Food Folks, you know what I'm saying? Like all those people and my friends from college and whatnot. And just let's just hang out.
Oh, you do not want to list these people. Damn, this guest list is discreet.
It's like hella VIP.
Well, you know, the thing about it, I named you and I named Cicely, but anybody else, like, I don't want to not name someone.
You don't want them to hear this podcast and be like, nobody ever pays me in gum.
Right.
Got it.
Right.
Okay. Well.
And then I also have this problem, right? Like we've been talking about where I feel like I'm close with people. There's other people who feel like they're close to me. And then I don't necessarily feel that. And so I don't want to put that out there.
Wow.
It's
so popular.
So
it's just it's full circle.
No.
It's full circle because no. This episode started with you talking about how we don't want you there, and now you're like, listen, I'm so popular that some people like me, and I don't even know them.
Party. I gotta
so
the time the people discreet. Look at that! I hope you can see our faces. Like F y'all.
It's cool.
Whatever. This has been such a like long time in the making to have y'all on this show, and I love you both so much. Thank you for doing this. And I was thinking the other day that like your girls are so lucky to get to see both of you like strive and dream and be creative people who are principled and joyful. And love one. Why am I getting emotional?
Corsia.
Yeah. I don't know. I love you both so much and your family. And I'm so glad that you were on the show.
Aww. We love you.
Thank you.
We hope these kids take us seriously.
They don't take us seriously.
Not even at all. We need trying to give them the game.
25 years old in therapy, blaming it all on us.
She used to tell me to think on my feet, you know, like stupid.
Yo,
like we're arguing with Madison now because we're like, the dishes, you're focused on the dishes, but the dishes teaches you time management, how to look at a problem and tackle a problem. You know what I'm saying? Like you want responsibility. That's what we're telling you. Do them be mindful of them. Now you have to do them by a certain time because you're not paying attention. You can't say that you want these things and despise the small steps that allow you to think through your life when you get to those things. And it's a struggle.
Yeah. I don't know if listeners need to know
about that she has to do the dishes. But it's true. I think, but I do realize that, like, in parenting, the way we parent them, I wish that more people would have, like my mom would have been like, these things teach you life skills. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's you're like, the dishes is not the thing. The thing is, like, being able to look
at,
yeah, Mr. Miyagi, what comes first? Do I do the dishes? How do I pile them up? How do I stack them? Yeah. Like I, it's like so many spaces in my life where I look at white people and I'm like, and that's why I like Black food folks too. Like, to be able to just sit and think through something is like such a privilege because we're always under the gun. And so like, that's the thing that that we're trying to give them is like that freedom to think. So when you do get under the gun, you're like, oh, this is nothing. This is doing the dishes when I was 12.
It's an important skill to have. And I think, they're so lucky to have both of you like looking out for them and taking care of them.
I mean, I guess. I mean, I don't take care of them now.
All right, this episode's over.
Yo, end it like that for real.
That was actually the end of the episode. This episode's over.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Subscribe to shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.